Welcome to Sex with Simmery. Frank, occasionally explicit edutainment on the most important topic of all. Sex with Simmery is not intended for children and is not safe for work unless your boss is particularly awesome. See more at sexwithsimmery.com. Welcome to Sex with Simmery. This is Dr. Timmery, and I'm very excited to welcome back a guest who we had like a year ago.
Yeah, almost a year ago. I think.
It's like our friendiversary.
Yay!
Welcome back, Arden Lee, who we had previously. She came to talk about her book, which was about seduction tactics for women. So how's the book stuff going?
It's going well. It was kind of bizarre. A couple months after it came out, I was kind of like, okay, I'm kind of over it. On to the next thing, you know, because mm-hmm. I want to concentrate on the writing that I have ahead of me as well. But people still come up to me and tell me that, you know, they enjoy it or that it's working for them. And I keep up with my blog and everything too. And I'm thinking about eventually doing a second book along the same lines. That's sort of a more the New Rules of Attraction is very like, you know, for your kind of average everyday woman to just kind of amp herself up and feel more confident and grab the kind of guy that she wants and, you know, and really know how to go after that great relationship. I'm thinking of writing a book for people who actually want to make seduction a lifestyle. Like, do not read this if you wanted to settle down with like the nice boy and like the picket fence and everything, because she will never go back. So that's kind of tossing around in my head right now. But no, the book's doing well. I'm very happy with it.
I have to say that in my personal experience, I had the book and I have given it to some single friends who were like, oh, I definitely need that. And they read it and they like, I'm never going to get this book back. And just really, you know, because they just keep handing it on to more and more friends who they think need to read it. And so far, so good. Like, in fact, today I was talking to someone who currently is holding on to the book, evidently. and the oncologist that she picked up at Starbucks and went on the nerdiest date of her entire life, which to her is spectacular. That's good news, folks. That's good news.
So nerds are pretty awesome, not gonna lie.
Well, I mean, they met over, well, homework, and then he wanted to read her homework, and he did. He read her 13-page paper.
Wow.
Yeah, but it was super slick because it was like, here, give me your number and then I can email it to you and blah, 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 blah. And then it's whole and mm-hmm. then they met and stuff and it's great.
All about the smooth clothes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because like not everybody needs to have the same kind of attractiveness. You know, you go for what you like and the way you put it was like be yourself but to
yep, be... times 10.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
Because then you'll attract the kind of person that you feel that you want to be with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's how it's applicable to everybody. It's lovely. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like it's one of the ways that I've found is really accurate that some people have described the persona section of the book. It's like it's increasing your signal versus your noise. You know, like too many people kind of lose their signal in a bunch of noise. And it's about increasing the strength of your signal that you're putting out there so that other people can respond to it.
Now this is possibly a tangent. So the concept of like hyperreality, we're going to get a little bit philosophical about this
because let's do it.
So much of our interactions obviously occur through screens now, mm-hmm. like in terms of texting people and social media, etc. And so the perceptions that we have of people are based not only on how they're choosing to represent themselves, but the fact that we are viewing it through that medium,
mm-hmm.
that it's not just like face-to-face interaction. And so we're actually already sort of simplifying ourselves to that really like essence, I guess. And then, you know, I think we talked about this a little bit last time, like how do you cultivate that persona if people are only going to be first encountering you through those kind of means, and how do you chop it down to the good stuff so you're not
like how do you project your persona through your social media so that it's staying consistent with who you are, or
yeah,
or how do you live up to the persona you project in?
A little bit of both,
because it can be in a weird way sometimes it can be much easier to come off as your personal brand on Twitter or on Facebook. You know, it's like it's like when I'm on Twitter, man, like I'm always in full makeup and amazing lingerie, or like tweeting nude in bed, you know, mm-hmm. and actually 90% of the time I probably am tweeting nude in bed. So I'm not like, I'm not lying. You know what I mean? But it's very easy to choose the things that you put out there in your social media and not, you know, and not broadcast the rest, you know? So it's great to put out like the cool things that you want people to perceive, as being related to you, or to, you know, to put out like all like the good stuff and kind of like not advertise the bad stuff. And that's exactly one of the things that I talk about in my book. It's like, if you're too negative on your social media, like if you put too many complaints or just things that you don't want associated with you, you know, even just in a very basic kind of associative kind of way, then you're going to muddy the waters of your brand. So I almost think in a weird way, it's kind of like when someone gets to you in person, are you living up to that? And I think social media is actually a great way to start refining your personal brand, because you're looking at what you're putting out there and how you want people to perceive you. And then it's important that you kind of have to actually make sure that you're committing to those choices in real life as well.
Interesting. And this is when I get a little bit overwhelmed. Like the idea of having to, I mean, you want to be authentic, and obviously yourself to times 10 is you.
Yeah.
But there is like this automatic association with that means that you always have to look impeccable. Like Us Weekly is going to be photographing you on the way to the grocery store, you know. Yeah. Like it's a little overwhelming. And like, for instance, in my life, pretty much the only time people are taking pictures of me, I am in full makeup. And so like in real life, that's not what I look like. That's not what I like on a, it's Monday right now. I don't look like that, you know? And it's weird. It's like, you're also getting a totally inauthentic idea of what I am like, you know? And so it's like, yes, you want to be that brand, but also at the same time, you're going to, I fear that we are making ourselves inauthentic by having to live up to a thing that is not actually reality, and then also presenting to people something that might actually be super intimidating. Like somebody might be really interested and then be like, I can't hang with that 24/7 looking perfect thing. Like I want to be able to sit on my couch and be able to eat too much, like,
well, et cetera. Perfection is boring, first of all, you know, and just because you're living up to a brand doesn't mean that you have to, that you have to be perfect or be intimidating. In fact, like showing chinks in the armor is incredibly seductive, you know? And I know, a girl who's a burlesque performer in New York, who's like quickly becoming one of my best friends. She just moved in with me. She's super cool. And, you know, getting to see her 24/7 from being her roommate is kind of like, you know, yeah. Are there days that she goes to the grocery store in no makeup? Yeah, absolutely. You know, but she still looks like a version of herself. And then you see even her social media, well, she'll be, you know, tweeting that she's like, watching a horror movie and, you know, chowing down on like gluten-free cookies or whatever, because she has a gluten allergy, you know, and all of this stuff relates back to who she is. So yeah, you know, it's like, of course, yeah, she's sitting on the couch like watching a movie and relaxing, but it's a horror movie, you know, because that goes along with her brand. And yeah, so it's definitely like, you don't have to aim for perfection. You don't have to aim for being done up all the time, but it's like, Are you a version of yourself? Are you projecting what you feel is true? There's a David Mamet quote that I have in the beginning of the book, which is, make the difficult easy, the easy habitual, and the habitual beautiful. So part of it is about the work that you put in to make everything effortless. And there were a couple years where I really put in a lot of work to be like, okay, let's get rid of everything in my closet that I don't want to ever be seen in, you know, and replace it with, you know, over time with things that are comfortable, but are still putting out like what, like, for example, like, you know, this is radio, so no one can see me, but for the sake of our audience here, I'll, you know, like I'm wearing like a red jersey dress and a pair of leggings with boots. And it's like
fierce ass boots.
Yeah. It's like, but they're comfortable for me to walk in. And like, this dress is like, it's like a wrap dress in Jersey. It feels like pajamas, you know? So like, I am totally like comfortable just walking around, but I still feel like me, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's about finding those things that finding your comfortable version of yourself that is still you. And like, I, you know, I've had people over in my house before and I'll walk around in my pajamas, but they're like silk pajamas that are like pink and white stripes with little black piping, you know, because it's like, well, yeah, what is the comfortable version of me while still staying true to how I feel on the inside and what I want to project about myself? And also just like giving myself permission to be someone who walks around her house in pink silk pajamas, you know, like I think a lot of women don't even like think about that, or they're like, oh, well, if I bought those would be too like pretentious or showy or whatever. No, screw it. You know, like I'm going to walk around in them because they're what I like, you know, and they're how I see myself.
That's an interesting concept of like permission. Cause I think a lot of times when we talk about, for women, especially like permission to do things that are morally wrong. And I think that practicality is often used as an explanation for not wanting to spend money on yourself in ways that you actually might feel better. Like,
yeah.
I wouldn't say that like if I paid money for pedicures, it would be a total waste of time because I do a bunch of barefoot training. It would just be like,
yeah,
just set it on fire. Just set it on fire and have as much fun because it'd be just as much good. But like, yeah, I can definitely get on board with the like, get the gym clothes that make you look hot.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
And it don't have to be Lululemon.
Yeah.
You know, we're not all...
like whatever you feel good in, fancy. You know?
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I bring that up because I spend a lot of time in gyms and like I've found that, you know, the leggings that fit for your particular type of body, not only does that encourage you to like go do this thing, this is healthy for you because you'll be like, bitch, I look fine as hell. And you're also, you know, like going about your day to and from, and then you'll look hot in your gym clothes and then you'll want to go do that more often.
Yeah. And I think it makes you feel different too. Like in the sense that like when you put on a uniform of any kind, it kind of changes your demeanor, mm-hmm. you know? So I've started this year, my New Year's resolution last year at the beginning of 2012 was that I wanted to learn parkour. So
how did that go?
So far so good.
Yeah.
I go like once or twice a week. Unfortunately, the place where I study, got kind of damaged by Hurricane Sandy. Mm-hmm. So it's been closed for like 2 months and I feel really out of shape. I feel like bad saying like, oh, I'm awesome at it like right now. But yeah, I learned a lot, and you know, it's inside on like a gymnastics spring-loaded floor with foam giant blocks, and so I'm always like, well, it's only foam, so I've never really actually hurt myself despite how many times I've fallen. So but yeah, but so when I go to classes there, you know, I wear like, you know, my black matte leggings and like a, you know, a black tank top or something like that, and I feel like I'm like Aeon Flux or something, you know. I feel like if I was just like wearing sweatpants and a t-shirt, I'd be like, I don't know. I'd be like, why am I here? You know what I mean?
I definitely, yeah, I get that. And there's so much related to this that it immediately comes to me for fitness. And I think that part of that is because for me personally, fitness is such an integral part to a lot of people being able to change their lives in a positive way.
Yeah. Oh, I 100% agree.
And the transformations that come from, like, I work with a lot of women in dance classes, for instance, and the way that you get a space where you get to like move in a way that makes you happy, and in a time where you're not feeling a lot of pressure because it's like it's a class situation, like you're not auditioning.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, I'm just feeling very inspired. I want to go be a fitness instructor right now. I'm like, let's do this thing. Let's be better. Let's love ourselves. It's getting out of control. Okay. So on another front, we're going to switch. So you have an album coming out.
I do. Yeah, it just came out last week on iTunes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's the major inspiration behind it?
The inspiration, that's a good question. That's not the question I thought you were going to lead with. Basically, I mean, I hang out a lot in the local rock scene in New York, and a lot of the guys that I dated in the last 2-3 years have been from that general pool of people. And, you know, just seeing them and seeing my friends and stuff like that, you know, get on stage and be able to express themselves in that way. I was kind of like, you know, I want in on that. And I eventually, I got linked up with a producer who had worked with one of my friends, and we decided, all right, let's collaborate on some tracks. And so we started doing that. Oh gosh. I would say almost 2 years ago was our very first meeting. And then, you know, over time we collaborated, I wrote the melodies and the lyrics, and he wrote most of the chord progressions and the instrumental arrangements and everything. So over time we collaborated on that. And then finally all the tracks were done. And then actually after the tracks were finished, then I hired my band to play the live show. So it's kind of funny. We're going about it a little backwards, because a lot of people form a band and then write their songs and then go into the studio and record. And I was kind of like, it just seems a lot simpler to do it this way. You know,
the summation of this story, I'm listening to this and I'm like, so one day, this is beautiful, as a matter of fact, Arden Lee wakes up and is like, you know what? I think I'll be a rock star today. And so she does.
That's kind of the story of my life, I guess.
do you think you just one morning be like, you know what? This is like legally bond. Like there's a court and they're like, do you think one day she's like, I think I'll be a lawyer today. Yeah. She just goes to Harvard.
But like, honestly, that's
awesome.
That's what I feel. And that's why I wrote my book. I'm like, that's what everyone should be doing.
Go
you know?
Do the things you want to do.
Yeah. Pretty much, awesome. You know, and
stop putting things in the way of what you want to do.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, it's exciting. And I hired my band based on, just recommendations and people I knew in the scene. And I basically told them, I was like, here, look, I'm going to, you know, I'm putting out this album and I need musicians for the live show. It's going to be really plug and play because the tracks are already done. All you have to do is learn your parts on your own, show up to rehearsal. Everyone should already know everything. And I'm guaranteeing a pay rate per gig. So even if the venue screws me over, I still have my musicians back. So it's, you know, it's an attractive gig. I was like, I really want good people to play in this band, so I'm willing to pay them what they're worth. And yeah, and then you know, I guess I knew people, and I hosted, like, I emceed a bunch of rock shows, you know, in the last year or so, and I just knew people and stuff like that. And you know, and I just eventually went and talked to a bunch of you know, managers, bookers, and people who were, you know, involved in production companies. And I was like, hey, I have a band now. And they're like, great, when do you want to do a show? And there you go.
Nice.
So our first show is January 17th. We're called Arden and the Wolves. Mm. And the EP is on iTunes. It's called Break Me In, and it's 6 songs. So it's kind of like an EP and a half, I guess. And yeah, I'm pretty excited about it.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
So you can add Rockstar to the list of things behind your name?
I guess so. I mean, I don't know. Rock star implies some degree of fame, so I don't know.
Well, you're getting interviewed by this podcast, so you're fucking famous.
Yeah, but that's for my book, right? I mean, I feel okay saying like author, because that's something I can prove. we'll wait on the rock star part till I, you know, get my record deal or something.
I'm
like
shocked.
That.
I feel like you would just own it, like just be like, yeah, fucking rock star, obviously. Obviously. All right. So speaking of rock stars, like now that we're on this topic, dating in the rock world versus any place else.
Oh, man. It's a trip. It's a trip. Let me tell you. I actually had my goth rock boy phase cured this past June.
You got an antidote, like somebody like stuck you and then you're like, oh, all better.
I went back to my original goth rock crush, and this is like, you know, the guy whose band's video I rushed home from school to vote for on TRL, like back in the MTV days in the late 90s. He got his band together again this year and toured, and one of my friend's bands happened to be opening for them in New York. So I was like, this is the moment, like, by the way, like, this is the moment where I was like, okay, I know I'm the real deal. Like, not when I got my book deal, not when my book was published or whatever. Like, this was the moment I was like, okay, I do know what I'm talking about. So I went to the show and I baked cookies and I knew this. Because I was like, hey, I brought cookies for the band, you know, like, because you can't just like say like, hey, I want to go backstage, because everyone can do that. But if you have something, you know, like, so I have this whole like backstage cookie gambit. It usually works pretty well for me. So anyway, sure enough, I got backstage also because I knew some of the security guards at the venue. Like, that's very, very important. Like, make friends with the security because they will help you out like so much when it comes to like when your favorite band then comes to town. They're like, okay, so all right. So the long version of this story was like, I walk in, I got my cookies, I bought like a general admission ticket. I walk in and I'm like, and I have this thing, like I've been go-go dancing in the rock scene for so long. I don't do it anymore, but not often anyway. But I've been so used to like walking around like in my lingerie and like not just like, oh, I'm looking like in my underwear, but like a nice like lingerie set with stockings and garters and accessories and the whole nine yards, that like sometimes I just go to rock shows like that and it's just totally normal and people kind of expect it from me. So, and also the security guards remember who I am. So like, oh, the girl wearing lingerie. So I'm there and I'm like, hey, do you know where's the band? Where's the headliner? Like, I brought cookies. Like, can I, you know, and you're like, hey, do you want one? You know, and you're like super nice. And the guy was like, oh yeah, yeah, I remember you. And then he's like, do you have a VIP pass? And I'm like, no. And he's like, all right. And the venue where this show was happening was like, you go up some stairs and there's a balcony that's kind of like, that's the VIP area. So there's the main floor and then you go up to the balcony. And then the dressing room is like past another like area. So the guy, like, he's like, all right, follow me. And he like, you know, ushers me past a whole bunch of security guards, gets me up to the balcony, and then gets me up to like the corner of the balcony where it's like super, super VIP, and like saying to the other guys, oh, she's good, you know. And I'm like, just like, oh, yes. And then he goes and he points to the dressing room door, which at this point is like maybe like 20 feet away from me. And he's like, all right, their dressing room's straight through there. I got you this far, kid. You're on your own. So I go up to the door. And of course, there's another security guard in front of it. And there I am with my cookies. And I'm like, hey, I brought cookies for the band. Like, can I give them to them? And he's like, do you have an all access pass? And I'm like, no. And he's like, well, I can't let you in unless you have a pass. And I was like, well, can I just hand them off? Like, I don't have to stay or anything. Like, you know, and he's like, no, I can't let you in. I'm like, can you give the cookies to the band? And finally he's like, oh, Jesus Christ. He opens the door like just a crack. And there is the lead singer. Like, there is this man that like, I had photos of this man like printed off the internet, like hung in my high school locker. Like, this was the guy who started the whole goth rock crush thing for me. And he's like, I look through and I see him like flat ironing his hair in the mirror, being like, you know, super vain and everything. And the security guard like turns to him and is like, this girl brought cookies. Do you want them? And he turns and he looks and he sees me just through the crack in the door. And he goes, she's half naked and she brought cookies. Send her in. So sure enough, like, we hung out, we made out that night, we exchanged numbers. I ended up on the tour bus for like the rest, like a chunk of the rest of the East Coast leg of their tour. And it was just like, wow. Like, there I was like on the tour bus, like sleeping next to him. And like, I just couldn't sleep. I was just like, it was really creepy. I was like staring at him the whole time. I was just like, like when you're like looking at the details of his face being like, oh my God, like I looked at these same features in like all of your press photos and all of your videos. And like, I was so obsessed and I was like, wow. I was like, good for me for like making my teenage dreams come true, you know? So, but after that, like, there are a number of things that happen where he behaved irresponsibly. Not with me, but
a
with
rock star.
Other people.
A rock star behaved irresponsibly.
He behaved pretty irresponsibly.
Holy cats.
And he was also like, I booked him for this. He said he like wanted to DJ more, and you know, and also he had this new album coming out. So I like I got him some press. I booked him this DJ gig as part of this whole thing. Like, I'm like, how am I at the point in my life where I am making connections for my favorite rock star? Like, how did this happen? Like, how, I just woke up one day and this is what I'm doing, apparently. So basically I did all that. And then, like, he shows up to this, you know, this party where, you know, where I'd helped book him to DJ. And he was just like, he was kind of a dick to me. Like, and like, I still, like, you know, I will be his friend through whatever because his music changed my life. But it was kind of like, I don't know. I was just like, wow, like, oh, like this is the person who, like, when I was 17, I used to fantasize about, like, sweeping in and, like, rescuing me from my dull suburban life, you know? And, like, and I was like, wow, in reality, like, you have more insecurities than I do, you know? So it was one of those things, you know, like, yeah, you go back to the source and then it just kind of...
It sucks when you... I think for a lot of people it sucks actually to meet, like, your iconic heroes from the past because they turn out to be people.
Yeah, right? And it's funny because it's like, I don't expect to hold them up to some standard of, you know, me putting them on... Like, because that's not a relationship, you know? Like, the fantasy is obviously... Everyone has a fantasy about another person until they get to know them well, no matter where you meet them or whatever. Our minds just fill in the details, and that's, you know, we fill in the blanks until we're, you know, proven otherwise or whatever. So that part is fine, but obviously that doesn't make for a real relationship. So obviously I was prepared to, you know, see him as human and with all his flaws and blah, 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 and whatever. What's heartbreaking to me is that when their flaws are such that they're prohibitive to intimacy, you know? So you're like, I'm here. I'm, like, ready to love you. What are you doing? You know what I mean? So, yeah. So that's what's really disappointing, because you want to, like, you want to be there for someone and you want to, you know, like, it's not that you expect to hold them up to a fantasy the entire time that you know them. You're just like, oh, like, it's heartbreaking when it's, yeah.
No, you know what I mean? I think that, like, a totally non-rock star example of this. Did you watch Freaks and Geeks?
No.
All right. Well, there's a spoiler alert. Also, the show's over. So, I mean, you should definitely go see it. But here's an element of the storyline. Somebody has, like, this epic crush for, I mean, the whole show is like one season, so it can't be that long. But
right.
It's an epic, epic crush. And then it eventually turns into a dating situation. Right. This is an epic, like, does not make sense to anybody why they end up dating, because the, you know, in the echelons of high school hotness, they shouldn't be together.
Right. Right.
So it's like
the crushy is much more high status than the crusher, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. And then they end up together. And it turns out that the focus of the crush is actually incredibly boring.
Yeah.
They don't really have anything in common. The reason that they're together is something kind of superficial. And eventually the crusher is like, yeah, this is sucks, actually. I went out of this. And their friends are like, but you can't, because the echelons of high school. What are you doing?
Yeah.
That's just like setting fire to a Camaro. Like, you don't do it. And... It's an amazing lesson to learn, though, in real life. It's like the people that you put, like, just because they're hot doesn't mean they're also good people or smart or interesting, you know?
Or compatible with you, you know?
Yeah, you can also... That is a lesson that takes forever to learn. And I personally felt it took a few times to realize that someone can be incredibly nice and very smart and wonderful, and all of the things about them are really great, but you're not meant to be together.
Yeah.
And that's a really hard lesson to learn, because we're taught to be just, like, so grateful to mm-hmm. find someone who fills the list,
mm-hmm.
the checkoffs.
Or, you know, or just mythologizing that whole, like, love conquers anything. You know, if you just love each other, that'll be enough. Well, and also, like, as a society, we are so bad at defining love for ourselves. Like, what it's like, I'm that annoying person who's like, if someone tells me they love me, like, the first thing that I want to ask is like, great, what does that mean to you? You know?
Yeah.
And it's like, when we can't even, like, yeah, like, oh, if you just love someone enough, it'll all work. Well, what is A, what does that mean? And B, no, you know?
And there's so many different, yeah, I think the what does that mean to you is a perfect question. And I think that in reality, it would hurt somebody's feelings to get asked that question, but that is actually a much more intimate thing to say what it means. Like, yeah, to actually give a description of, these are the feelings that you evoke in me, and this is what I get out of being around you, and like, to actually detail that is a much more vulnerable position and a much more intimate thing than, yeah, to drop the elbow.
Or here are the actions that I plan on enacting because of the way, this is going to cause me to do.
Yes.
You know, like,
future action steps.
Yeah. I'm one of those like love is a verb people, okay, you know, like love is actually, to love someone is a skill set that I think we need to cultivate, that a lot of people think that an intense feeling is enough. And honestly, I kind of look at someone, I'm like, great, you're feeling a lot. What have you done for me lately? You know, like, just because you're feeling something, that's great. Excellent. I'm glad about that. But how is that going to affect the way that you treat me, the way that you deal with me, and the way you prioritize me? You know, I had an ex who was like, you know, even long after we broke up, he was like, yeah, I loved you so much that it hurts sometimes. And, but like, I'm like, okay, but you also depended on me financially for a year. You put me in terrible jeopardy. You behaved in ways that were emotionally manipulative and like borderline psychologically abusive, like, you know, and like, okay, that's great that you loved me, but you were kind of a shit about it. You know what I mean? And I'm much more interested these days in people who are, you know, people who are committed to the tools and tactics, I guess, that need to go into making a relationship work. You know, people who are into communicating and just being being realistic about things, you know. And I don't think that you have to sacrifice passion for that either. Like, I still feel incredibly passionate about the people that, you know, that I crush on, for lack of a better word. Because I don't want to say fall in love with, because love has all these, it means so many different things to different people. But yeah, I have found that in fact, I would say I feel even more passionate about that lately. Like, if someone can communicate and can be like, can actually like have the skill sets required to be in a relationship, then like, that's just so much more awesome. Cause then you can actually talk to them, you know, and you can achieve that kind of intimacy. That's like, I can talk about whatever I'm feeling with you, and I think you actually hear what I'm saying.
Are you familiar with like the, love styles theory? Like, I believe Lee came up with the idea of they use Greek terminology to describe different styles of love. So there's like the ones that we hear about the most are like mania and ludus. And mania, mm-hmm, is like that obsessive thinking about somebody and saying something like, I love you so much that it hurts. Mania is the one that is, you know, in movies,
yeah,
in music, in art. And then there's like ludus is the game playing love.
Yeah.
Where it's like they tend to go together.
Yeah.
They tend to, and people who enjoy ludus and who love in a ludus style, I mean, it's legit, but it's like very hard to sustain in the long term.
Right.
Then you've got like agape, which is like more of a,
like, selfless, charitable love. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
Eros, which is lust.
Right? Eros is like a romantic,
Yeah,
that sort of thing. Lust, lust is going to go into a little bit of mania. I mean, hopefully lust is over.
Hopefully,
all of them.
Yeah, exactly.
Then there's like the companionate style, which is like, you know, you can just hang out all the time. You could go on a vacation for 6 months and you wouldn't get sick of each other.
Right.
Like, that sort of thing. Anyway, so all these different styles, and they just get like so rated, you know, like which ones are real love, and like the long term thing. Not everybody wants a long term thing, but if you do want a long term thing, you're gonna need some of that other stuff.
Right.
And
yeah.
Sometimes sometimes the mania alone sometimes is not going to sustain you.
Yeah. Well, and actually that's only on a very physical level, that's only sustainable for so long too, like, because on a chemical level, basically neuroscientists theorize that you know, and because that state is basically caused by release of things like dopamine, norepinephrine, and phenylethylamine. Actually, it suppressed serotonin levels because your dopamine and your serotonin, like, they kind of, it's either like one or the other. And basically, a lot of neuroscientists have theorized, like, after a while, your brain either just can't produce those chemicals anymore, or it's that your receptors actually become kind of desensitized to them because they just can't process being that high all the time. And you actually build up a tolerance for them, you know? So after a while, so it's like, if you're relying purely on mania, purely on infatuation or whatever you want to call it, it's like, that's not going to last forever.
That's,
you know,
drug addiction. You're just going to keep chasing that high.
Exactly. Oh, my friend, Reed Mialko from readaboutsex.com tweeted this great quote from one of his classes last night. He said, oftentimes people think they've met their soulmate when really they've met their crack dealer. And I actually have a blog about this, a post about this on my blog, which is www.ardenleigh.typepad.com. And it's back, I think this, I wrote this in like February or something. So it's within the last year. And it's called Chemistry versus Compatibility. And basically the idea is that the chemistry that happens when we fall in love or we crush or whatever is, it's actually not that remarkable a thing because it's happens in nature. We are biologically programmed to do that, to, you know, form these chemical attachments to people. And we always think like, oh, I don't want to break up with this person because I'll never feel that way again. Well, yes, you will. Actually, it's scientifically proven. It would be kind of weird if you didn't. It might take you a while, but it will happen again. And what actually is the commodity, the thing that we really have to latch onto that is important, is our compatibility. You know, do we have similar values? Do we have similar lifestyles? You know, are we gonna work together? You know, is this going to work? Do we, you know,
especially if you're gonna form like an economic unit too? Like, dating's one thing, but if you're ever gonna like hitch your horse on somebody else and have like a bank account, or like you're gonna have a lease or a shared phone line, anything like that.
See, now, like, that just, that scares the shit out of me right away. I like, you just say like joint bank account, not get the, I get the creeps.
you could be married forever and never have a joint bank account, but yeah, like, right? You know, if you ever want to cohabitate, you know, something like that, or if you, you know, I had no idea how much money family plans save. I was talking to somebody who's like, all right, this is a side note. So like, when I had an iPhone, I was paying like $100 a month, because evidently like individual users are where they make all of their money, because like the family plans, they pay like $30 a fucking person.
Really?
And I was like, oh man, I don't want to have kids, but that would be a better deal.
Yeah, right? Well, it's funny too, how many, you know, like, I stopped to think about it recently, because I was like, my personal theory for myself about marriage, the way that I feel about marriage, is I always say, I want to get married one day, and I want to have a beautiful ceremony and wear a beautiful dress and have a cake and exchange vows and rings before all my family and friends and never fill out the paperwork. And that way, if either person wants to go, it's like, see ya, bye. You know, no lawyers, no prenups, no divorce, not like none of that. Like, why? Like, why do you need a piece of, like, it's kind of weird when you need the government's permission to break up.
Well,
right?
The thing there is, you're capturing all of the things that are supposedly the valuable parts of it, that are supposed to be like the folks who protect marriage, defend marriage, etc. Those are supposedly the values that they're trying to espouse, but in reality the benefits to marriage, entirely separate from the love stuff, are those legal things.
Yeah.
Like being able to inherit your own stuff, you know. Be able to, like, you know, just the paperwork stuff. Yeah.
right?
Yeah.
I just don't really know what the benefit is. Okay, you do save money on taxes. So there's that.
Like, but other power than that, of attorney, you know, inheritance things. Like, yeah. It's all money. It really is all money. That's the point of it. And, I mean, you can use the terminology and get, like, different treatment. Like, for instance, if somebody comes to your door and tries to sell you something, I guarantee you, if you say, I have to ask my husband, mm-hmm. they will stop bothering you. They will not press that issue because they're like, oh, okay, that's a real thing. But if you say, like, oh, I have to ask my boyfriend or my roommate right. or let me think about it, those don't matter.
Sure.
Yeah.
Those are not taken seriously. I fully, if and when I one day, let's say, engage in a wedding ceremony. I would absolutely. Why wouldn't I wear a wedding ring and call someone my husband, you know? But it's like, I don't want to be in a relationship where I feel I need to lock down someone to get them to stay with me. Like, what's the point?
What do you think about the, in Mexico, they have the option for short-term marriages. They're basically like leases.
That's kind of awesome.
Yeah, this came up like a year ago, I think, that there was a legal option for, I don't remember if it's 1 or 3 years. It was an odd number, I feel like. That's how I remember it.
Yep.
And you could sign up for this short-term marriage. And if you want to, you can renew it.
Yeah. You know what? There was a playwright, one of my favorite playwright, Stephen Dietz, had a line about that in this play called Force of Nature, which is based on a Goethe short story. But basically, he says, one of the characters says, like, I think marriages should be granted in installments, and at the end of the 5 years, you decide whether you want to sign up for another tour of duty, you know? And this is the one thing, too, about, like, you know, long-term relationships or marriages or what have you, you know, you assume that you're going to, okay, let's say I feel right now like I have someone that I'm totally in love with and I want to spend the rest of my life with that person. Awesome. That's so great. Let's start down that path. That's perfect. But if I put the expectation on myself and on that person that I'm always going to feel that way, it's like that's where things get a little iffy, you know?
And
people change.
And
people
let's be really honest about time. This also. It's not necessarily just that you feel so passionately about this person now that you want to keep them forever. It's also so much driven by the fear of being alone. Mm-hmm. And that if you get that on lockdown, at least you won't be alone.
Yeah.
Because lots of people stay together who clearly should not be. And it's not even like they have kids in the house or anything like that, but they're just still together because the alternative is horrifying. Mm-hmm. And it's not even a love thing anymore. It's just it's an abject fear that you can't stand to be by yourself.
Right. And you know what? I'm totally okay with like people whose marriages turn into long-term friendships. It's like, cool. If that arrangement is working for you, awesome. If you're both happy, like that's fine. Like, yeah, the mania wears off, you know, the fireworks wear off. Like, okay. I mean, I wouldn't settle for a situation in which I wasn't having amazing sex, but you know, I'm also open to non-monogamy and things like that too. So who knows how that would ever play out. But for people who are in a situation where they don't recognize that they're actually miserable, you know, it's like, it becomes like the devil, you know, you know, and it's like, people are so, your cat is adorable, by the way. Sorry for all you listeners. Just so you know, Timmy's cat is being really cute right now.
They hear about her every once in a while and sometimes she meows.
Yeah, but people are so afraid of change, ridiculously afraid of change, and afraid to even break out of their own stories about themselves and how they feel about relationships and et cetera, that they stay in what they know, in even if they're miserable, because it's comfortable. And that's a lot less scary than moving outside of their comfort zone to pursue happiness in the wild blue yonder.
So I feel like part of your book, as we discussed before, is not just about, so I'm a young single woman and I want to go date and I'm having difficulty picking people up. I mean, so much of it is about breaking out of that.
Yeah.
It's about getting out of ruts and habits and using, you know, we have one life that we know of, to use it you know, to its fullest advantage sort of idea. And so much of that is targeted specifically towards young people looking for a partner. But all of these things we're discussing now, like, you can have those revelations, you can have those changes, even if you've been with your partner for 20 years, you still have that opportunity. The idea is you have to be able to do it together. Otherwise, it's not going to be sustainable, because this is what we know, is that in long-term relationships, if one person starts changing dramatically, it's going to cause conflict if the other person isn't also making the same changes or comparable changes.
Yeah, or support, or doing something that, you know, just makes the puzzle piece fit, you know, making it work in one way or another. Yeah.
And this is this pertains a lot. In fact, my dissertation, a lot of the background on it is like, if one person in a relationship, just weight alone is the thing that I focused on. If one person gains or loses a significant amount of weight, the amount of stress that puts on a relationship.
Yeah, because absolutely.
Because there's, you know, there's possible interactions with how attractive the individual feels, how attractive or attracted the partner feels. There's a lot of fear that, like, oh, I'm going to have to also change. Mm-hmm. Or now you're doing this change for somebody else. Or, you know, this is going to change the way we interact with each other. And in family systems theory, the idea is that people are very resistant to change within their family because it's going to mean that everything has to change.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
And so we, you know, when we commit to somebody long term, I mean, I think part of that commitment is, of course, like, that we're going to be able to swing with this stuff.
Yeah.
That I'm going to be willing to, you know, try to hang with.
Yeah, I think that also, that whole thing is kind of part of my reason behind my sort of, I wouldn't say anti-marriage, but shall we say marriage skeptic stance, where it's kind of like, if you really expect everything to remain the same, like, you go in and say, we are going to be with one another forever. And if we're not, then we have failed as a couple, as people, as individuals, what have you. That expectation is just like, it's totally unrealistic, and it doesn't allow for the fact that people do change, whether it's both of you or one of you. So the way that I feel about, like, the kind of relationship that I want is like, let's enter into this as individuals who are working together on a relationship, you know, on like it's a joint project almost, you know, or working together to make this work. But let's understand that not only are we going to change, but the world is going to change. And let's always check in with one another and make sure that it's working, you know? And that's where, like, and that's where so many couples go wrong, I think, is they, once they're together or married or in whatever sort of secure setting that they feel, you know, whatever, they assume that they don't have to check in with one another anymore. They're like, okay, we're good. And that's how you get into that sort of that rut that so many married couples face, where it's like, I mean, the stereotypical, you know, kind of like.
Or the check-ins become less authentic because there's a fear of creating those changes.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, the check-ins are like, oh, everything's fine. I think there's a line in Mr. and Mrs. Smith that is always resonating. Mm-hmm. Angelina movies, I can usually quote. Yeah, she says something about it starts out, there's just these spaces in between you that just get bigger and bigger and bigger, and they're filling up with all of the things that you're not saying to each other.
Yeah.
And it's like, that is just going to get worse.
Uh-huh.
And then the whole point of that movie is that there is that chasm of silence, that chasm of inauthenticity, that fear of rocking the boat, really. I mean, theirs is a particular situation, but we all have, like, you know, our own inner secrets that we don't share outside, or we share with somebody else or whatever, you know, get the stuff that you tell your friends versus the stuff you tell your other friends, whatever. But so make sure that those chasms don't keep getting bigger, and to do those really hard check-ins every once in a while. And every once in a while, I'll read about those stories where somebody cheated and they say it was probably the best thing that ever happened because it forced us to be really, really fucking honest for the first time in a long time. And now we have that intimacy and that vulnerability back that otherwise was just going to slowly eke out our ears and then be gone.
Yeah. And I think sometimes people need, you know, an event like that to sort of shock them back into a mindful presence with one another. And actually, what I've found over the past year is that my newest favorite dopamine rush is saying all the scary shit and just like going for it, you know, like whatever that means. And just like, and finding that when you are okay with that and you don't allow it to scare you too much, it's not going to scare the other person either, because you're kind of comfortable with it and you're not putting any pressure on them to deal with it per se. So like, you know, I've had a couple of like, you know, vaguely scary relationship talks that were like that, that, you know, like, I won't get into those because those were super personal. But if you want to use like a less involved, like kind of funny example, the night that I met the rock star at his concert where I brought the cookies and whatever, he said, I was like, I can't believe I said this. It's kind of hilarious. He says like, oh, he said something to me. He was like, whatever. I bet you bake cookies for all the bands that play here or whatever. Like just, you know, being like that. And I turned to him and I looked him in the eye and I said, well, I have a lot of friends who play in local bands here. And yes, I do bake cookies for almost all of their shows. But you should know that I printed photos of you off the internet and posted them in my high school locker. You were my first crush ever. And I like rushed home to watch your videos on MTV. So with you, it's kind of different. And he was like, wow. And I was like, kiss me. And he did. I was like, good for me. I'm like, that's the crazy thing is you do that and you realize like it works, you know? And I was like, cause it's not like I was approaching like some fangirl being like, oh my God, I watch your videos. Like, cause you're not approaching with that energy of expecting them to stay on the pedestal or expecting them to be the fantasy. You're approaching them just like as a person, be like, hey, yeah. Like, how's the tour going? I'm so psyched that you guys like, you know, got back together. Like, how's things? How's, I don't know. Like, how's LA? How's the, like, whatever. You're just talking to them like a person, but to be honest with them like that, like, it's just, it's really cool. It's fun actually, because not everyone is, it's just a really rare thing to see from someone. So when you can do that in front of someone, it kind of, it takes them aback in kind of a cool way. And I'll say this, it definitely at least makes you memorable. That's for sure.
I like it. I mean, I think that that's all totally applicable to non-famous crushes.
Yeah.
You know, because a crush just has that sort of same power over you in general.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
That debilitating, I am the most awkward person in the world. Everything I'm going to say is going to be so awesome.
Yeah, right. But yeah, just with anyone in general, like, actually, I read this book recently called Click. It's by Ori and Ram Brofman, for anyone who wants to look it up. And it's basically about things that cause us to connect with other people around us, or even like with the work we do or the environments we're in or whatever. And they talked about the five different levels of communication, and, you know, with the first one basically just being like, so how's the weather? You know, just not talking about anything, till the fifth level is like what they call peak statements, where it's like someone just flat out says everything that they feel like. And like, you know, the example they gave in the book was something like, you know, wow, I was really sad that you like, I don't know. It's like something about like made a comment about how like I wouldn't know how to like raise that kid, or like, you know, or we passed a kid on the street and I would have given him ice cream or something, and you said I shouldn't have. I don't know, something along those lines. But it's like, but I guess what I mean is, I feel that if you don't think that I'm going to be a good parent, are you going to want to stay with me long term? And I guess like ultimately I'm afraid of losing you. And I'm like, how often do we say stuff like
really
that to people?
Really cutting through the bullshit?
Yeah. And just be like,
well, it freaks people out.
Yeah, exactly.
Being really honest freaks people out. And there's like there's that polite zone. Cause like in reality, like that small talk shit is depressing as hell. Oh, yeah. It makes everybody feel bad.
Like, you know nobody's happier is when you allow for that vulnerability. It's like when you go there first, you kind of create a safe space for someone else to be vulnerable and not feel judged.
But if they don't reciprocate, then you know that you probably shouldn't keep going either. Like that's how you test the waters. Like if you're willing to be the one,
shouldn't you? Like I haven't learned that part yet.
I think there's two different ways that goes. Like on one hand, if you're trying to avoid being a creeper, you know, and if in the course of a conversation only one person is giving out personal details and the other one is not, odds are good that the one who's not is not feeling super comfortable in that space. So, you know, if somebody is having difficulty, like, you know.
Oh, sure, yeah.
You might want to scale it back from that point then.
Well, also, I think there's, you know, maintaining your level of privacy is like, there's a lot of things where it's like, well, is it anyone's business? Like, you know, like, I don't have any credit card debt, but like, you know, if I'm like on my first date with someone, like, am I going to talk? No, it's none of their business at that point. You know, if I'm going to get married to someone, which I'm not, but like, you know, if I were, that would probably be something to bring up at that point, you know, like, but it's like, I don't know. I feel like you can always create a safe space without necessarily freaking someone out, you know, and even like checking in with them if they seem like they're freaking out, like you can ask like, hey, you look like this isn't super comfortable for you. Like, are you cool with this? Or would you like to change the subject? Or like, hey, like, what's going on with you right now? You know? And that way you create that space for them to tell you as much or, you know, I guess as little as they want to. Sometimes it can be very honest for them to just be like, yeah, you're right. I'm not feeling comfortable with this conversation. I'm not prepared. You know what though? I've never gotten that. I've actually never gotten someone to be like, I'm not comfortable with this conversation. I guess my last like super long-term relationship several years ago, I got a lot of like, I'm not comfortable dealing with this right now. But I don't know. He was also an incredibly avoidant person and had his own issues.
There's also something to be said for like, if you come with a persona or what I have found with other sex educators is if we introduce ourselves with our job title at some point or like answer the question, what do you do? Mm-hmm. And sex educator or sex therapist or something like that is in the title. Absolute strangers will just unload things that they wouldn't tell their best friends.
Yeah, that's true too.
So there's something to be said for that as well, that you might not be getting a standard sample.
Yeah, that's possible. I also think though, it might be like a chicken or the egg thing because people that I know in the sex ed community are, it's so necessary for us to learn to be good communicators. I almost feel like this is a really interesting thing that I realized lately is like, have you ever heard of something called mirror neurons? I also learned this in the book Click, by the way. It's like, it's this awesome thing where like they studied these monkeys, you know, and if monkeys are watching the scientists work, they actually like their brains, even if they're just like hanging out, their brains start mimicking the work that the scientist is doing. So in a weird way, I guess it's kind of like why you feel scared at a horror movie. Like, why are you scared? You're in the theater. No one's going to come and like murder you like by sneaking up and like there's it's no like
empathy.
Yeah, exactly. So, but you feel that same fear in your brain because you're watching what's going on. So one of the weird things that I realized is kind of like my super ninja power is that most like muggles, for lack of a better word, get super nervous on first dates because they're like, oh my God, it's a first date. And you know, people don't learn this skill set to like
it's
go
like
on
a
dates.
Job interview.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas me, I'm like, I totally got this. Like, oh, this is going to be awesome. And you know, I think that my approaching it with that attitude actually like in a mirror neurons kind of way makes them feel like more confident in themselves and comfortable. Like, cause I'm kind of like on some level, I'm like, yeah, I got this. Like, we're fine, you know? And on another level, just like kind of almost catching my mood, that sort of infectious enthusiasm or even like comfort or whatever you want to call it. And which I think like it makes people feel comfortable around me and immediately like greases the skids towards intimacy, which is like so, it's so awesome. It's just like a really, really cool thing. And similarly with communication, I think if you're someone who can be comfortable with that and hold space for your partner's feelings and for anyone's feelings and create that space for them to open up to you, which I think a lot of sex educators are just naturally good at or have had to learn to be good at because that's part, communication is just such a big part of sex and dating and relationships. So I think it's, people are going to be more comfortable being honest with you about themselves because you hold that space and they're almost less likely to be freaked out because you're so comfortable doing it yourself.
So we've been talking for about the length of an episode. So it's time to start wrapping up. So obviously people are going to want to know more about Arden Lee. Arden Lee, how can people find out more about you?
You can just Google me. No, I'm kidding. Well, you can Google me, actually, but there might be naked photos that come up, so just be careful.
Oh, no.
Don't do it at work. You can find me on my blog, www.ardenleigh.typepad.com. My book is The New Rules of Attraction, and you can find that probably at any Barnes & Noble, or you can download it on Amazon if you have a Kindle or an iPad or whatnot, or just order it. My Twitter is at Arden Sirens, ArdenSirens. Sirens is the name of the forum that I run in New York for women to throw out their ideas about seduction and yada yada. And you can find that online at seductionsirens.com. Oh, and my band is Arden and the Wolves. You can look for us on iTunes. And that's probably it, right?
No Tumblr?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I have ardensirens.tumblr. That's where you can find all my nude photos. Oh. ardensirens.tumblr.com.
Okay.
Yeah. They're classy.
Are you on Bebo?
Hmm?
Are you on Bebo, MySpace?
No, no. I do have a YouTube channel, but right now it's just like all my TV interviews. I don't have any original content yet. That's goal for 2013. So I'll ask you, do you want like a super rockin' pop rock track, or do you want a more mellow, like mellow track? What do you think is good?
I don't know.
All right. I'll send you a song. It's called Miles from Fair, and it's the opening track of my album.
Ooh, you get to hear music for free.
Yay.
Don't say I never did nothing for you. People that listen. Right. Well, thank you so much, Arden, for coming. This is obviously delightful.
Thank you so much for having me. I feel like we always like we sit down and we talk and then just like an hour passes. And anytime, you know, anytime you want to talk on your couch for an hour, I am totally down.
Right on. I just need to move my couch closer to your couch and then it's less Yay. Of an arduous thing.
Yes, I should have you come and talk on my couch someday and then I can post it on YouTube.
See? I also like other couches. All couches are great.
This would totally work.
That's awesome. All right. Well, thank you so much. And everybody go check out all the things that we just listed. And thank you so much for listening. And have a good day.
Yeah. Thank you for listening to Sex with Timmery. Please check out more from sexwithtimmery.com, where Monday through Friday there's new content, including polls, weekly sex columns, and Friday sex links. And if you have any questions, comments, or violent reactions, please email them to sexwithtimmery@gmail.com. That's sexwithtimmare@gmail.com. And thank you.